Welcome to Season 3 of In the Lead with UCEA. I'm your host, Monica Byrne-Jimenez, Executive Director of the University Council for Educational Administration. In this podcast, UCEA presents pivotal conversations with people making an impact on educational leadership preparation, practice, and policy. Learn about the latest happenings and cutting-edge research from UCEA's community of scholars. This season, we are diving into how the Wallace Foundation helps communities build more vibrant and just futures through research in the arts, educational leadership, and youth development. In particular, we'll be talking with the foundation executives and authors of recent reports on educational leadership. In today's episode, we hear from Jason Grissom, lead author of How Principals Affect Students in Schools, a systematic synthesis of two decades of research commissioned by the Wallace Foundation. He is Patricia and Rhodes Hart Professor of Public Policy and Education at Vanderbilt University's Peabody College and Faculty Director of the Tennessee Education Research Alliance. His research uses large-scale administrative and survey data to study school and district leadership, educator mobility, and issues of educational equity. He has written on the principal trajectory from preparation to hiring, evaluation, diversity, supervision, turnover, and effectiveness. How is this research contributing to our understanding of the role of the principal? What has been the impact on how we think about the development and support of school principals? Listen here to find out. Welcome, Jason, and thank you for being here today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
It's so great to finally get a chance to talk to you one-on-one on this like really awesome stuff that you've done. But let's get to it. The report you co-authored with Anna Agelete and Constance Lindsay came at a time when public schools were recovering from the shutdown and when teacher and leader shortages were in all the headlines. And into this sort of grimness of post-COVID, your report comes out and says pretty clearly that, you know what, principals matter. What was that like for you?
Well, we worked on the analysis and then the writing of the report for about 2 years. So we didn't plan for the COVID timing because we started beforehand. Mm-hmm. But I think those COVID challenges we were experiencing at the time of the release may really have helped the report resonate. COVID was helping make all of us more aware, I think, of the importance of great teachers and great leaders. And at least at my house, I was seeing what was happening at my child's school virtually because I was supervising learning at my dining room table. And you're really getting a much keener sense of just how important what was happening in the school environment, even when it was virtual, right? How important that was for what was happening with kids then. And certainly post-COVID, we've all been really aware of what students missed in terms of schooling during the pandemic and how much we have to make up for. So I think there's even more attention on what we can do as a system to help accelerate student learning. So our report, really one of the top line findings is just how much principals matter for those learning outcomes and for other kinds of outcomes that we care about as well. So I think now it's more important than it ever has been that we work towards ensuring that we have a great principal and really a great leadership team in every school.
Yeah. And I think a lot of ways it captured what many of us already knew, either because of our experiences or because of research. It's saying that the principal really does matter. And so I think it also came at a time when public education was sort of being beat up. And then to have someone say, you know what, your work matters and it matters in a big way was probably really kind of comforting and inspirational to many. And so I appreciate, like you said, how it resonated at the time that it came out. But let's sort of dig down into what you found as you were writing this report, right? You developed this framework that connects equitable leadership and equitable outcomes. And so I want to break that down a little bit because it's fairly complex. And I think one of the first things you all did was identify principal behaviors. So tell us more about those findings.
Yeah, so the first thing I'll say is that this was a report that we wrote with the support of the Wallace Foundation. And what the foundation asked us to do is to look at what was the best available research that we had on the connection between what principals do and student achievement. And I think that's an important point because that charge was a specific one, right? So the conclusions that we're drawing come from that best available research, qualitative research, quantitative research, mixed methods research, but it has to be research that makes that connection, school principals and student, well, it started with student achievement, but other kinds of student outcomes. So that's an important connection, but it's not everything we care about in school leadership. So I think it's important to say that right up front, right? Mm-hmm. But still, we spent months and months culling through these studies and trying to come up with what were the studies that we could really lean on in terms of making that connection, and what could we learn from them about those domains of behavior that seemed to be linked most clearly to better outcomes for kids. And so we identified four of those. And so we call those engaging in instructionally focused interactions with teachers, building a productive climate, facilitating collaboration in professional learning community, and managing personnel and resources strategically. And we go into a ton of detail in the report about what each one of those is, but I'll try to give you the high level.
Make sure you go read it.
Yeah, right. So engaging in instructionally focused interactions with teachers, this is what principals are doing in the classroom to support teacher instruction directly. So this is observation, other kinds of evidence collection, using student test scores, et cetera, to give feedback to teachers, to coach, to engage in teacher support, but it's teacher support around instruction specifically. Building productive climate means trying to build systems in schools that are marked by the things that we know are important for people working in a school to experience. So good communication, high feelings of trust, markers of self-efficacy, right? Believing that what we're doing matters and that I can have an impact. Facilitating collaboration and professional learning community. I mean, that's obviously connected to productive climate, but this is really around recognizing how important collaboration is in the complex work of teaching and learning. And so there's a lot of good evidence that teachers working together to improve their practice can be a really high leverage set of things for teachers to do, right? And so what is the leader's role in facilitating that collaboration, creating authentic opportunities for teachers to learn? And then managing personnel and resources strategically means having clear goals and then managing strategically towards them, like taking the resources that you have at your command and then ensuring that those resources are being used to their most valuable sort of purpose. And so what we find is where leaders are engaging at a high level in each of those domains, those are really the schools where kids are learning at a high level.
Yeah, and I was just talking to someone yesterday about this, about the need to really define what we mean broadly by instructional leadership. And we've talked about instructional leadership for decades now, and it's been used in a variety of ways. And it seems that what you were all able to do was to really define these like four characteristics of what instructional leadership can be in ways that support both teacher and student learning.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, I always think of this paradox in the field where we all believe instructional leadership is so important. That's sort of like the dominant frame we have for thinking about what principals should be doing. And yet, if you ask 100 people in the field, what is instructional leadership? You'll get 100 different answers. And so I think a way of thinking about what we're trying to do here is bring a little focus to the work.
Right. And by doing that, really making this a much more effective lever for principals, right?
That's the hope.
Yeah. Exactly. Okay, so you've got these principal behaviors that you've been able to identify, and then you also talk about a set of leadership skills. So what are those?
Yeah, so the skills are tough because I think there's a ton of skills that principals need. And certainly the research on principal skills is rife with findings and recommendations about the kinds of skills principals need to be successful. We try to group them into three broad areas. So we call them people skills, instructional skills, and skills for the organization. And it's really, it's a pretty diverse set of skills, even under each one of those buckets. So, you know, people skills are exactly what they sound like, right? So relationship building skills like communication, human development skills, recognizing how people grow and develop. And so there's that set of skills. And then there's a set of skills around instruction. So all of the complex skills that you need to be able to support a teacher's growth, right? And so the ability potentially to be able to recognize what high quality instruction looks like versus maybe instruction that's less effective, for example. But then also the skills to be able to communicate that and to coach teachers, because clearly that's going to be part of the work as well. And so then already you start to see that the people skills and the instruction skills maybe are not so distinct from one another, which right. is one of the points we try to make on the report as well. And then I think there is this set of skills that we call skills for the organization that are really, I think, skills that a person would need to lead in a complex environment, even if it wasn't a school, right? So these are things like data use. Like every leader needs some kind of data literacy and ability to be able to harness data in that organization, strategic thinking, the kinds of skills that you would need. Certainly you need to lead a school, but you would need if you were leading a nonprofit, if you were leading in the business world, et cetera. And so the point is there's a pretty broad base of skills. They seem to fall into these three large buckets, but I think we need to know a lot more about what the specific skills that leaders need. But the point is that these broad skills they need to support the domains of high leverage behaviors that we were just talking about.
Right. And again, like very complex, like you're able to put them in these three sort of general categories, which helps you understand the differences between each one of them or among them. And yet at the same time, each one of them is, like you said, incredibly complex. And so the implications for support, ongoing support, and even thinking about how do we research this, right? There's a lot going on there.
Totally. I mean, I think about this. If I was a principal having a coaching conversation with a teacher, the skills that I'm going to be drawing on are numerous, right? And they're going to span sort of the relationship building piece, mm-hmm. you know, having a relationship with that teacher that's going to allow that teacher to trust in my judgment and that I'm going to be credible. And also that teacher's going to recognize I have his back or her back, right? Mm-hmm. So there's sort of a people component of that. There's also my instructional expertise and what I'm bringing to that conversation that might be valuable. And there's also these organizational skills that are going to be relevant, like looking at that teacher's data, drawing some meaning from that data, relating it to the practice that I observed in the classroom, and then using that in a developmental way that's going to help that teacher grow. And that's only just a very specific example. And so the amount of complexity here is huge. And I think there is a lot more that the field needs to know and to learn about what skills are needed and how they operate in practice. But we sort of provide a beginning here, I think, in linking these together.
Yeah, thinking of it as a beginning is a really helpful way of framing it. Feedback from listeners helps us to continue bringing you pivotal conversations with people making an impact on educational leadership preparation, practice, and policy. If you have any takeaways or questions from this episode about the research and reports we're discussing, head over to the show notes below and click on the survey link. We'd love to hear your thoughts. So lastly, your framework mentions an equity lens. And I know that was really at the heart of one of the questions that you all had. And so how does that work given the sort of behaviors and the skills?
Yeah. So the equity lens idea is the idea that principals should be driving their schools towards more equitable outcomes for marginalized and non-marginalized students in their schools, which means that their work in these four domains of practice have to reflect that priority. Mm-hmm. And we liked the metaphor of the lens because it emphasizes a perspective on the broader work. Mm-hmm. So as a principal, I'm working to build a productive climate for my building, but that means a productive climate for all kids, right? Regardless of background. So how am I ensuring that students, regardless of who they are and what they come to school with and what their identity characteristics are and so forth, how are all of those kids experiencing those levels of trust and care and self-efficacy, you know, those goals that I have for a productive climate? And so that's the lens idea. So I'm all kids in mind. Climate is not just the typical kid or the average kid or the kid who I see the most often. It's a productive climate for kids, regardless of their background. You can think of all kinds of examples here, right? So I'll take another. So stick with the climate piece, but family engagement is going to be a facet of a productive climate. So how do I think about structures I can build in my school that allow families to be involved in the life of the school, regardless of their circumstances? You know, some families, some parents are working third shift, for example, and it might not be feasible for them to just come to the PTO meeting that I hold at 5 o'clock on a Tuesday. Mm-hmm. And so if I'm thinking about school structures with, again, all kids, all families in mind, and I'm thinking about it from an equity point of view, then how am I creating other opportunities that are beyond those kind of standard or typical opportunities for those families who want to be involved in the life of the school? And how am I going to ensure that's happening, right? Mm-hmm. How am I going to be building communication structures around family engagement, to stick with that example, that are reaching out to families regardless of language orientation or their own literacy or whatever?
Jason, as you were talking about the different sort of scenarios for the relationship between the skills and the behaviors, one thing that I noticed, the equity lens, right, sort of in there kind of helping to see better if we use the lens metaphor. But the thing that I heard you talking about too is that in a way, this equity lens also allows principals to ask different questions about not just their practice, but about what's happening in their schools. And that asking of different questions then opens a possibility for different answers.
That's right. I mean, I think a key part of the equity lens is self-reflection. It's questioning one's own practice and bumping that up against what I'm observing in my school environment to ask myself, how do I need to be changing and adjusting to ensure that I'm pursuing this important goal day to day, week to week?
Yeah. And yet, given the complexity of everything we've been talking about in terms of behaviors and skills, that opportunity for self-reflection is often the thing that gets cut out, right? And yet, what you're suggesting is actually that's key, right, to having this equity lens and being able to do the things we want principals to be able to do in the schools. So yeah, it's sort of a double-edged sword there. I think whenever any of us put out some important piece or some piece that we think is important, right, I think there's hopes that we have about what happens with what you learned. And so I'm curious as to, like, what do you hope principals or faculty or district level people or even state policymakers learn and do with the information that you created?
Well, I think my first hope goes back to where we started, which is this top line finding. The report makes really clear that principals really matter for what's happening in schools. Mm-hmm. And given the importance of the school leader, I'd really like to see states and school districts realizing how high that potential return on investment is and mm-hmm. building out good strategies to prepare, to select, to support high quality leaders in every school. I really think that should be much more of a focus of what we're trying to do in the education policy system at different levels. It's certainly a really key focus in some places, some school districts, some states, but really making that, regardless of geography, that focus, something this report points to is that really should be a policy goal, a policy target for everybody, regardless of where we are. So I would say that would be one sort of 20,000 foot hope, is just seeing more of that investment in general. You think about it for different constituencies. I mean, let's take the leadership preparation side. You mentioned leader prep. I mean, I think a challenge we have in the field of educational leadership is that the standards that we set for what we expect of school leaders is very high. Sometimes I think we're expecting superhumans, not real humans. And if standards are aspirational, right? And so part of what you do when you write down a standard is you're giving a person something to aspire to. And I think that's important. I do think, though, that when you're having to train and prepare on so many different dimensions at once, that it can lead that preparation for the candidate even to feel unfocused. Like, there's so much I have to learn and I don't understand on what timeline I need each one of these things. And so a little bit, I hope our results can do is bring a little bit of focus to where we can start, as we're trying to provide people with a set of skills and capacities that they need to enter leadership and be as successful as they can be right at the beginning of the career. Like, what are the foundational pieces that they really need to build on? And again, I think foundational pieces is something, if you ask 50 different people doing leader prep, what are those foundational pieces? You would get 50 different answers.
Right.
Yeah. But also for me, you know, if I was placing a bet on what are those foundational pieces that a person needed to be successful and give them something to build on over the course of a career, I think the domains of practice that we're identifying, I'd place a bet on that as being a decent place to start. If you really want to give someone focus for support, their initial sort of pre-service training and support, you know, I think these four domains, I think you could do worse, let's say, in terms of four areas that you could start with.
Yeah. Well, I also think, I mean, this idea of focus, but also sort of distribution, right, in terms of, which is where, like, the partnership work between districts and preparation is so important, right? Because to think that one organization can do all of that at once sets people up to be very, you know, unhappy, right?
Totally.
And so then what's the trajectory? How do we pass aspiring leaders from prep to induction to support throughout? I think this kind of, again, this idea of, you know, hey, we're going to do this little part and let's talk about how do we continue that work moving forward, right?
Yeah, you think of it as a learning arc, right? Like, when you're starting out and you come in with the experiences that you have, you need to build on those experiences. And all of that is not going to happen in your pre-service preparation. It just isn't going to happen, right?
Right.
And so how do we design systems where people are building these skills and capacities, certainly over into an early career, but, you know, on into your veteran years in the leadership profession, I think is much more. I mean, that's where we've moved in a lot of places. I think that's certainly the direction the field is going, to think much more about that arc and that trajectory, as you said.
Right. Yeah, because the complexity of the context is constantly shifting as well, right? I mean, this idea that schools are sort of stagnant and then these closed systems that aren't responding to the external environment is something we've moved away from too, thankfully.
That's right.
And if nothing else, COVID was a clear indication of how open schools are as systems to the forces that are happening in the community.
For sure.
So it's just, how do we work together to make sure that we're ensuring and providing opportunities for principals to be successful?
That's right.
Which is what we all want.
That's what we all want.
You've mentioned this a little bit, but if you could talk a little bit more about where you'd like scholars to go next. If you think about this report as the beginning, in your own mind, what would be a next step?
I mean, I think there's so many different directions this work can be taken. And we're building on 20 years of work, or more than that, although we were focused on the 20 years that came right before the writing. But as we build forward, I think there's so many different directions we could go. I think the one that occurs to me the most is really thinking about the how, you know, how principals should be engaging in each of the four domains to be successful. You know, I'll take the managing personnel and other resources strategically domain, because it's the one I probably think the most about in my own work. But if you think of personnel as a resource, teachers are a key resource for principals in a building. And we know teacher hiring is so important. So how should principals approach hiring to ensure that they're recruiting and selecting teachers who are going to help them meet their goals, right? Or how should we structure assignment and placement processes to ensure that we're matching kids with teachers in a way that's going to allow a particular teacher's skills to be successful in the right classroom with the right set of kids? How should we think about strategic retention of teachers? Not every teacher is a great fit for every school building, right? And so how do we think about what we should be doing to hold on to our most effective teachers for that particular organization? And then finding maybe other fits for teachers who, you know, that this particular school is not great for them. And then you have strategic budgeting. And I think that's a particular area that the field is way behind on. I think we've thought of school resource decisions as being centralized at the district level for a long time.
Right.
And so we haven't been thinking about what is the principal's actual budget authority, how that varies from place to place, and all of the different kinds of budget allocation decisions that principals make. Right. I think that's something we need to learn a lot more about when we think about the how. But I think you could ask these kinds of how questions, essentially any of the domains. There's just really so much to be done. And I think lots of really productive follow-up that the field could be engaging in to sort of build out, take, you know, what I think and hope are some good insights, but really learn more about how they work in practice so that we can operationalize them and provide some even better guidance for the field.
Yeah, because I think one thing that the report does really clearly is sort of the what. And so now, yeah, thinking about, okay, how does that enact it? And, you know, how people learn that? What are the implications of like sustaining that equity lens? Yeah, there's all kinds of questions, like a domino effect of questions, right?
That's right. How do the skills matter, or the domains of practice, the needs vary by context? And how is enactment in one context look different from another context? I mean, this is probably decades of work, but hopefully we have some direction that is productive that comes out of this work.
Right. So yeah, so everyone listening, you heard it here. Get to work.
That's right.
Jason, it's been great talking to you. As I mentioned earlier, there's so much in this report that needs to get opened up and looked at really carefully, both in the context of what we do in preparation as well as what happens in schools. So I can't thank you and your co-authors enough for doing this important work. And I look forward to, you know, reading your next report on some of the hows.
All right. Well, thanks, Monica. I enjoyed the conversation.
In the Lead is produced by University FM. We'd like to thank the Wallace Foundation for their support of this podcast, and you, our listeners, for your commitment to improving educational leadership and policy to create equitable, ethical, and socially just outcomes for each child.